Before the next section, I'd just like to take a moment to be in silence and to honor the voices of those that we have heard today and the voices of those who have not come here today because they are truly living in terror. So let's just take a moment and think about all the testimonies we've heard, and then we'll go on to the next section, which is the recommendation section. Thank you. You have heard today from a number of people whose lives have been dramatically affected by the events of September 11th. These are not the single stories that you hear or read in the media. These are people all over in all of our communities across America that are feeling these impacts. In many cases, they have been the victims of a coordinated government a strategy that has ignored some of the fundamental rights that exist in our U.S. Constitution. We express today our deep concern regarding this assumption of new powers by the executive branch that poses risks to human rights and civil liberties, particularly when such powers have not been authorized by Congress and there has been no public debate concerning them. We hope that this event here is the first of many across the country. We hope that all of you who are in the audience, who have come forward in spite of such great fear, will know that you are supported, you are listened to, and your voices will be heard. All of our voices will be heard. We would like to present 10 recommendations that we are asking all of you as representatives, elected and appointed officials, local, state, and federal levels to acknowledge and act upon. And to present those 10 recommendations, I'd like to ask Nama Kadura, Serena Kaur, Elham Farah, Asha Mohammed, and Arlene Oki to please come up. These are recommendations that have been put together by a large number of communities, and we'd like to have the representatives of those communities come forward to tell you what they are.
We ask that our elected officials review with a critical eye any new legislation or policy that contributes to the climate of fear and discrimination. All actions that promote a sense of inclusion and contribute to a reduced climate of fear and discrimination should be actively pursued. At the federal level, establish a congressional oversight committee that can monitor the critical balance between security and civil rights, and that has authority over the actions of the Justice Department. We also endorse the proposal to create an Office of Civil Rights and Liberties with a Senate-confirmed director.
We call for federal, state, and local officials to actively pursue strategies to improve the cultural competence of all law enforcement and state agencies and to increase the representation of these communities in all agencies. We ask that individuals should not be targeted for investigation, detention, or selective enforcement of the laws because of their race, religion, ethnic background, or appearance, nor should they be denied employment because of their race, religion, or ethnic background.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Individuals should not be detained unless they are charged with either criminal or immigration violations. Individuals charged with crimes or immigration violations should not be arbitrarily detained before trial on such charges. all persons have a right to effective assistance of counsel. There should be no interference with the attorney-client privilege.
Secret evidence should not be used to deprive individual of their liberty or try them for violation of criminal or immigration laws. Due process protection must apply to any closure or wholesale seizure of the assets of any individual, businesses, charity, or religion organizations.
Governmental compilation of databases on individuals can pose severe dangers to freedoms of association, religion, and speech, and the right to privacy. The government should not compile databases on individuals without procedures to protect against labeling them as suspected terrorists on the basis of their lawful religious or political activities, associations, race, religion, or ethnic background. We encourage everyone to engage in vigorous debate about the path on which the Bush administration is taking us. It is critical to engage with the communities represented here on a regular basis about the impact of continuing government actions and the pervasive climate of fear and discrimination.
To our distinguished commissioners, we have an opportunity for you to speak. I will direct questions to you either individually or in pairs and ask you to respond not more than 2.5 minutes. The first goes to our local representatives, our member of City Council and member of the County Council, Nick Licata, City Council, and Larry Gossett, County Council. The same question will be asked of two of you, and I'd ask you to respond. Many of the troubling federal policies and procedures now being advocated by the current administration are implemented here on the state and local level, and often cannot happen without complicity and collaboration of local officials. As you've heard in the testimonies today, these policies perpetuate and contribute to the increased discrimination and climate of fear facing our immigrant communities of color. Would you respond to the concerns over the city and county or state's role in implementing federal policies that unfairly target immigrants? Councilman Licata first, followed by Councilman Gossett.
First of all, let me thank the Hate Free Campaign to sponsoring this event and all the community groups that hosted it. I also want to recognize that we've been joined by another council member, Margaret Page, who's in the audience, and there may be other council members that are here that I haven't seen. Let me also say, Assalamu alaikum and buenas tardes. I believe that this is a great nation because we have many cultures, and that it's a great nation because you are part of it, and that on a local level that we maintain the values that we all share, the values that are in the Bill of Rights, the values of freedom of expression, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and that local government must and should do all that we can to make sure that our local police force does not become a branch of the INS, that we do not end up seeking out individuals for deportation, that our police should be used to protect the rights of individuals to lead lives without fear of being intimidated if they wear a turban or a scarf, to make sure that we do not have government agencies harassing or intimidating businesses like the USDA did with regarding the Somalia grocery stores in the Rainier Valley, and that I personally am working on legislation to introduce in the City Council, that we make clear that the city will enforce the laws fairly and not get involved in trying to become an appendage of the INS. It's critical that we remain a society that has an open democracy, an open society, and that we do not allow the tragic event of 9/11 to turn this society into a society of fear and intimidation. Thank you.
I wholeheartedly concur with all of us in this room making a commitment to fight against racial, religious, and ethnic profiling and discrimination. I wholeheartedly agree that local governments, whether it be state, city, or county, should fight hard against any effort of our colleagues or people in our local communities to impose us on us. I'd like to thank Senator Klein, who last year, when Governor Locke and Attorney General Gregor, in the excitement over 9/11, put forth a very onerous ordinance or state law that they wanted passed that would make it easier for police to listen in on conversations or search and seize people in the community, that he took that piece of legislation and put it in his desk and didn't let it get a hearing. I strongly hope that people in this community, in a couple weeks, there's a couple of my colleagues are putting forth a piece of legislation that says that we shouldn't have any communication or correspondence, people to people, to Cuba, because somebody in 1979 said that Cuba was a terrorist nation without any kind of proof. We need to resist that. Finally, as an African American, a politician, I know the pain and the anger and the alienation and the sadness brought about by being racially profiled. We have a lot of problems in the African American community, but the biggest rage right now is centering around issue relative to racial profiling, where Robert Thomas Sr. Was brutally killed by a King County police officer. And most people in the African American community think that it wouldn't have happened if the police had not been trying to be a vigilante and go down off duty with no signature that says he's a police officer and tell some African American people to get the hell out of here. I think it's important that all of us get involved in organizing street heat to change all of these policies, and I think that all of us must work to get everybody that we know to accept the equal humanity of all Americans, and by doing so, we can solve a lot of these problems. Thank you.
The next question is addressed to Washington State Senator Adam Klein and Washington Assistant Attorney General David Horn. We're concerned about the state anti-terrorism legislation and other pending legislation, such as driver's license bills that target immigrant communities and the civil rights of all of us. Additionally, what is the state doing to promote policies that truly address the discrimination and climate of fear facing our communities of color and that promote a climate of inclusion? How do each of you respond to questions such as those?
Thank you, Mr. Justice. And let me first remind everyone here that all Americans, other than our Native Americans, are themselves immigrants. Each of my four grandparents came to this country from Europe telling stories very much like these. The stories that I've heard today are very much like the stories that my Jewish grandparents told me, except that they had happened in some other country, that these events would now happen in this country is a national embarrassment. And because I am a Jew, I want to single out one group here, and that is my Muslim brothers and sisters, to express my own embarrassment at this country's behavior, or some members of my country's behavior, and to hope fervently that we can take action that will make sure that this does not happen further. I also have a colleague here, Representative Al O'Brien. Representative O'Brien and I sponsored legislation that I believe answers your question, Mr. Justice, legislation that would make it, that does make it now, illegal for people to train using arms to do these kinds of things, to take action, violent action, against our fellow Americans on the basis of their race or their appearance. That legislation was passed by the legislature and was signed by Governor Locke, and it is the law in this country, in the state today. But that law won't be enough. Simply having laws on the books, if they are simply pieces of paper, makes them irrelevant and weak. And it makes us a weaker country to have these things continue to happen. These acts will stop when Americans, and I mean all Americans, make them stop. It's not our government that's going to do that. It's us. And we, I believe, are becoming more and more able to do that. Our state is relatively progressive in the way we see these things. We have immigrant communities all over our state, not just here in Seattle. As these communities become more attuned to the American political scene, I believe their strength will grow and their voice will be heard, because this is ultimately a democracy. But democracy itself is simply a means for these voices to be heard. It's not the goal. And the action that needs to be taken in a democracy is continuous. It does not stop. I used to think when I was young that these problems were the problems that would be solved by my generation. These problems are never going to be solved until all people unite to solve them. Thank you.
Justice Smith, I was deeply moved by all the testimony here today, in particular that of the children who are so courageous in coming here today and who can't even go to school in peace. And as a gay man who has spent much of the last several years working on the issue of children being harassed in our schools, I know what courage it took to come here, and I want to thank you for that. The Attorney General for whom I work, and her name is Christine Gregoire, was also deeply moved and troubled, both by the terrorist attacks on September 11th and by the rash of hate crimes and ugly incidents that were triggered by those terrorist attacks in the aftermath. She has taken a number of steps to deal with those actions. First, she has gotten together with the county prosecutors who do the criminal prosecuting in this state and put out the word that we have a strong hate crimes law in Washington. She helped to write it and get it passed 9 years ago. Local law enforcement should be taking reports on hate crimes, should be sending those to the prosecutors, and those crimes against people based on their religion, on their race, should be being prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Second, Attorney General Gregoire stepped up her efforts to get the state legislature to pass a bill once and for all to ban the harassment of children in schools for any reason, but in particular, those of you who are being harassed because of what you believe, because of where you come from, because of the color of your skin, because you're gay, or because somebody happens to think you're gay. And fortunately, they passed that bill this year, and we're working with the schools to implement it. Third, we have continued to work with the Human Rights Commission to prosecute cases where people have been found guilty of discriminating against another. We cannot tolerate that in this state, and we will continue to be vigilant in prosecuting those cases. And fourth, we put out a set of bills designed to protect the people of the state against acts of terrorism and to make sure that we're prepared to deal with those acts. I hope that people distinguish between different people's approaches to this issue. I liken it to school safety, where in the wake of the shootings at Columbine, the schools realized that what they needed to do was get the right people in the room and ask, what do we need to do to make our children safer? And then make a plan, take those steps, and make the schools as safe as they could make them. We took a similar approach to terrorism. We asked, what do we need to change? What steps do we need to take? For example, we asked the prosecutors, if someone poisons the water supply, is our criminal law adequate to deal with that? Do we have a law that fits that? Did the people writing our laws think about the possibility that someone would commit an act not designed to harm one or two other people, but to simply annihilate a population? And the answer came back, no, our laws are not very well suited to that, and they need to be changed. Most people in Olympia agreed that there needed to be some changes made. There were a number of disagreements about what approach to take. We had a bill, some people were critical of it. Senator Klein had a bill. Not everybody agreed with that approach. We have continued to work with Senator Klein, and I appreciate his leadership on this issue, in trying to work out those differences and develop an approach. But I want you to know, we did not propose a wiretapping bill. That was not our bill. That was somebody else's bill. We do not support racial profiling. We applaud the legislature for passing a bill this year to condemn racial profiling and to demand that local law enforcement not only take steps to eliminate racial profiling, but come back to the legislature at the end of this year and report on what steps they have taken so that there is accountability. The common theme here is working together to make people safe. And we will continue to do that. And I want to tell you that this event you've organized here today is a tremendous contribution in that effort, and I thank you for holding it.
Now representing the federal government, the significant reference has been to the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And so I'm going to pose a question to District Counsel Dorothy Steffen of INS. Our communities believe that crucial rights and freedoms are being violated by the Immigration and Naturalization Service policies and procedures as the administration pursues its war on terrorism. These policies have resulted in innocent people being targeted, immigrants being held in secret detention facilities, hearings being conducted in secrecy, and detainees being denied the right to legal counsel. INS officials have also participated in raids on immigrant workers, such as Operation Tarmac at Seattle SeaTac Airport. To the extent that you can or may, could you tell us what steps can be taken to change these dangerous courses of action?
Certainly. I thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I join you in your condemnation of hate crimes, and I would like, in response to your question, to suggest that the best solution is the one that you have offered here today. Meetings such as this one provide opportunities to build bridges of understanding. I offer to you, just as you have asked me to be here today, to keep an open mind and to listen to you, that there are two sides to a story, that there is due process, that we do respect due process, and that we as civil servants follow the letter of the law, the laws that Congress has passed. Should you disagree with those laws, certainly you may vote, you may write to your representatives. However, understand that we are bound, we take an oath when we take a job with the Immigration Service to follow the laws that are passed in this country. And that is what we try to do. And I might add that one thing that I see looking out in the sea of diversity before me is that this panel mirrors that sea of diversity to some degree. We are children of immigrants. My father was a refugee. His family was persecuted. My mother was an immigrant. So I hear what you are saying. These things are personal to me. And again, I thank you very much for this opportunity to listen to you.
Thank you.
Assistant United States Attorney Bruce Miyake and FBI Assistant Special Agent in Charge Ron Nesbitt. This question is directed to the two of you in the order in which your names were called. I offer to you the same privilege as I did before, to the extent that you may or can give us your response. Our immigrant communities are living in fear as a result of widespread targeting by the FBI and the Department of Justice. The interview program and the Absconder Initiative are just two examples of policies that target people based on religion and ethnicity and have brought about no direct links to terrorists. Other federal agencies have also acted in disregard of due process. Programs like Operation TIPS encourage individuals to report others on the basis of unfounded suspicion. Can each of you respond to these concerns and indicate how your respective agencies can ensure that all people are afforded the protections, due process, and basic human dignities accorded by our Constitution? Mr. Miyake.
Thank you, Your Honor. I first want to say thank you for inviting us and having an opportunity to hear the voice of your community. It took a lot of courage for you simply to come here, and it took even more courage for the speakers who got up and spoke publicly. It's difficult to speak in public, number one, but it's even more difficult to speak about some of the issues that have been spoken about here today. As Malcolm Nakagawa mentioned, 60 years ago, Pearl Harbor was attacked. And as a result, in a climate of fear, there was an erosion of civil rights, which resulted in the wholesale internment of Japanese Americans, which included my parents. It's been difficult to sit here and listen to the criticisms of the federal government. It's been difficult to hear some of the stories that have, and some of the problems that your communities have encountered and endured. Part of me doesn't want to be here because I don't want to be identified with that. But if we're to prevent this from happening, I do it in part as a legacy to my parents. We have to be accountable. We have to hear the effects of the policies that are being enacted. And it's important that not only my office locally and the FBI office, but the Department of Justice as a whole, and John Ashcroft and the President hear the problems. I intend to brief John McKay, the U.S. Attorney for this district, on this meeting, and I'm going to recommend that we send a memo or letter to the President and to John Ashcroft himself discussing some of the things that we've heard today. Now, with respect to... We'll send it. With respect to what we can do to try and alleviate some of the concerns around due process, as has been mentioned, having forums like this, which aid to establish a relationship between federal law enforcement and your communities, to try and open up channels of communication and build trust between your communities and our agencies. And not simply to have a one-time forum, but to have periodic meetings with members of your community and the federal law enforcement. I think that's important, and it's something that we need to do. We need to periodically review our policies based upon the feedback that we get from the communities. We're not always going to see eye to eye, but we must have a dialogue. We need to hear you. You need to hear us. And we must avoid at all costs the spiraling public fear and paranoia, which creates a climate of fear, which creates some of the problems that we have. What was particularly troubling to me were some of the incidents of hate that I heard, because as the coordinator for hate crimes in this district, I take that very strongly. And I think one thing that my office can do concretely is to aggressively prosecute those hate crimes. We aggressively prosecuted the attack on the Idris Mosque. I currently have a case which involves widespread hate mail, which we are going to aggressively prosecute. And it's important that we do this because the message needs to be to the community at large that we will not tolerate that. You are our community. Just like we are your community. The other aspect is that both federal and local law enforcement, we need to maybe have training so that we can be more sensitive when enacting some of the policies or enforcing some of the laws. And I think that's something that we need to do and something I'll propose as well. Thank you.
I'd like to say good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for having me here, especially to the Hate-Free Zone Campaign of Washington and Karen Yoshitami. What I will do, because we have very little time, I will make myself available after this meeting to talk with the leaders of certain groups, whoever wants to chat with me about certain things. One thing that the special agent in charge, Mr. Charles Mandigo, and myself do, we go out to groups and speak to have dialogue. I've heard a lot of very significant testimony here today. It's been very moving. I look forward to continuing this dialogue to directly address some of the issues that have been raised and to add what Mr. Miyake has stated. On the interview program and the Absconder Initiative, first off, the Absconder Initiative was never based upon religion nor ethnicity. It was a program that came out of the Department of Justice. Essentially, when someone enters this country, you fill out certain documents through the U.S. Department of State, you fill out certain documents through the Immigration Naturalization Service. Those documents, you basically stipulate that you are going to agree to the terms of those documents, which give you status in the United States. The Absconder Initiative essentially was that we had a tremendous number of people that were in the country that we didn't know where they were. So the President, the Attorney General, came up with this program where these people would be interviewed, where the INS, the Department of Justice, the FBI, and several other entities would go out and try to determine where these people who essentially had absconded were within our, if they were even still in the country. Secondly, the interview program. One of the things the FBI does, we are the investigative arm of the Department of Justice. After September 11th, all the hijackers were dead. All the people on the planes were dead. There was no one to go and talk to. All we had was a massive crime scene. Based upon that, the best thing that could be done was to get the passenger manifest and to go back and backtrack to see who these people were as best could be done at that time. What was done was that everyone that had a relationship with these individuals as could best be determined were interviewed. This is the same thing that the Bureau does or that any investigative body would do. You have to backtrack. And that's one of the reasons that this interview program came about. Again, I'm certainly available to answer a lot of questions after this forum because, again, I really do appreciate the dialogue. As far as hate crimes, when information comes to the FBI concerning hate crimes, we investigate these things vigorously. We do them with the United States Attorney's Office. And what we are really looking for is for someone to come forward. They can call the FBI. You can walk into the FBI. You can write the FBI. And what we're really looking for is clarifying information from the person making the complaint. From there, we will do an investigation. It goes into the Department of Justice. And the decision is rendered whether the Bureau should go forward with more investigation or whether there will be prosecution. That's essentially the way it works. So it's been very tragic hearing these things today. If you feel that you've been the victim of a hate crime, then I would suggest you certainly call the office. You can talk to me after this forum. And again, I will be available. I thank you all very much. I mean, this has been very significant, and I do appreciate the dialogue.
Congressman Jim McDermott, you will have the last word from among the commissioners. This group has been concerned with the overreaction of government, sometimes at the expense of constitutional rights, many times in direct violation of individual rights. The Patriot Act was passed with little discussion, but with the assurance to the public that civil rights abuses would be monitored. Our communities believe it is critical for congressional members to question the path of the administration, to push for a congressional oversight committee to monitor the actions of the Attorney General, and to establish a separate Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties with the powers of a Super Inspector General. What, if anything, sir, do you have to say?
First of all, let me say a great big thank you to the people who came up and told their stories. As has been said by others, the public testimony that you give is very important because it lets other people know that they're not alone. On several days after September 11th, when all of us were recovering from the shock, suddenly there was a story about a Sikh motel owner down in Renton who was beaten. And I had two immediate thoughts. One was about what happened to the Japanese in 1942, and the second one was what the Danes did when the Nazis said, we're going to round up the Jews. The Danes, including the king, put on the yellow star and said, we're all Danes, that's it. And I couldn't help wondering exactly how we were going to do this, and I called Mayor Schell and Ron Sims and Gary Locke and a number of the city council people and others, and we established this hate-free zone. We did it about 5 days after this all started out at the Seattle Center. And I want to say a big thank you. I don't know where Pramila is, but when you start something like this, you never know how big it's going to get. And Pramila, you have done a tremendous job. What Pramila has done is to start with a telephone and a chair and a desk and put this together and given a place for people to call in with their stories and begin to cross-involve each other around this issue. Now, this issue isn't going to stop today. And I believe that I voted against the Patriot Act because I... in large measure because of the excesses that I thought were very possible under the way it was written. It isn't Ron Nesbitt's problem. He didn't do it. We did it. And only we can undo it. And what I'm now going to suggest to you is I will take this back, and I hope there's enough copies around. I can give one to every one of my colleagues in Congress so they can see what's going on in Seattle. But all of you have fellow friends and relatives and ethnic cohorts around this country, and every community ought to be starting a hate-free zone. And it will only start if you begin to make contact and begin putting people together. Seattle already did this on the issue of the Requiem, the Rolling Requiem. On September 11th, the Seattle Symphony said, we're going to do the Requiem. And suddenly, it was happening all over the world. And you have the power to do that. If you sit back, I can't do it by myself. I don't know where the Somali community in Chicago is, or where the Muslim community, or the Syrians, or any of... I don't know where these people are, but you do. You know where they are. And you can reach out and start a national movement so that members of Congress are forced to have exactly what Jay and I had here. Not forced, but given the opportunity to sit in front of the audience and hear it. I say forced because I share with Bruce Miyake, I don't want to be here. I hate hearing these stories. They make me so angry and ashamed. But it's important that every member of Congress be given an opportunity for this kind of meeting to happen. And there isn't I think there's probably a Pramila in every major city in the United States. And this can be done everywhere. I'm going to do my part on that too. But let me... let me just leave you with a quote that I carry in my wallet. It's by Martin Niemöller. Some of you may not know who Martin Niemöller was, but he was a Lutheran minister in Germany. And he said at one point, when they came for the socialists and the trade unionists, I wasn't a trade unionist or a socialist, so I didn't speak up. And when they came for the gypsies, I wasn't a gypsy, so I didn't speak up. And when they came for the Jews, I didn't speak up. I wasn't a Jew. And when they came for the Catholics, I didn't speak up. And when they came for me, there was no one to speak up. And you and I must speak up for each other. We are all one family.
A few closing words. We are America. Join me in turning your head right to left and look around, and every person you see is an American. As has been said by several of the speakers, we are a nation of immigrants. We are all immigrants, or descendants of immigrants, except perhaps our Native Americans who occupied this continent 20,000 years ago. So we, in dispensing justice and freedom and equality, do not separate persons based upon place of origin, religion, language, ancestry. We, as the Statue of Liberty says, with Emma Lazarus' poem inscribed on it, welcome persons from other lands. Those beautiful words, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses longing to be free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shores. Send them, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. What we have done here today is, as has been noticed, the beginning of what can be a ripple throughout the world. We are proud of the state of Washington. We are proud of the city of Seattle. We are proud of our 38 counties, including King County. We are proud of the quality of leadership we have in our public officials at all levels, in our private citizens of all circumstances who believe, as the rest of us believe, that America is a great land of freedom and opportunity for all persons. At the point of which any one of us thinks that we are better than any of the rest of us, we are in trouble. So let us symbolically, if not in fact, join hands in celebration of our existence. Thank you. Very much.